Chapter 15. It's my fault. I'll admit the truth. I did it. You've undoubtedly noticed it by now, if you've been reading closely. I apologize. Of all the dirty tricks I've used, this is undoubtedly the nastiest of them all. I realize it might have ruined the book for you up until now, but I couldn't help myself. You see, doing something like this consistently over 14 chapters was quite challenging, and I'm always up for a challenge. When you noticed it, you probably realized how clever I was, even as you blushed. I know this is supposed to be a book for kids, and I thought it was well enough hidden that it wouldn't come out. I guess I was too obvious. I'd have taken it out, but it's just so clever. Most people won't be able to find it, even though it's there in every chapter. On every page. The most brilliant literary joke I've ever made. My apologies. I stood, facing down the silhouetted creature, still holding on to Bastille's arm. I slowly came to understand something. I had been wrong to run from the creature. That had caused my group to get split up. Now the hunter could take us one at a time, grabbing us from the catacombs as we ran about in confusion. We couldn't continue to run. It was time to confront it. I gulped, beginning to sweat. This is one of the reasons why I'm no hero. Because even though I walked down that corridor toward the creature, I pulled Bastille along with me. I figured two targets were better than one. As we moved forward, Kaz trailing behind, Bastille lost a bit of her frenzied look. She pulled her dagger from its sheath, the crystalline blade sparkling in the flickering lamplight. At the end of the corridor was a small room, split in half by the large iron grate. The scrivener's bone was on the other side of the bars. He smiled as I approached, one side of his face curling up, lips leering. The other side of his face mimicked the motion, though it was made of bits of metal that twisted and clicked, like a clock mechanism that had been compressed tenfold until all of the gears and pins were smushed together.
"Smetry," the thing said, voice ragged, as if the sounds themselves had been flayed.
"Who are you?" I asked. The creature met my eyes. The entire left half of its body had been replaced by bits of metal, held together by a force I didn't understand. One of its eyes was human. The other was a pit of dark glass. A Liveners glass.
"I am Kilimanjaro," the creature said. "I have been sent to retrieve something from you."
I was still wearing the lenses of Rashid. I raised my fingers to them, and Kiliman nodded. "Where did you get that sword?" I asked, trying to hide my nervousness.
"I have the woman," the creature said. "I took it from her."
"She's here, Alcatraz," Bastille said. "I can feel her flesh stone." "Flesh stone?" I thought. "What in the name of the First Sands is that?"
"You mean this?"
Kiliman asked, voice deep and crackling. He held up something before him. It looked like a crystal shard, about the size of two fingers put together. It was bloody. Bastille gasped.
"No!"
she said, rushing toward the bars. I grabbed her arm and barely managed to hang on.
"Bastille,"
I said, "he's goading you."
"How could you?"
she screamed at the creature.
"You'll kill her!"
Kiliman lowered the crystal, placing it in a pouch at his belt. He still held the sword in front of him.
"Death is immaterial, Kristen. I must retrieve what I seek. You have it, and I have the woman. We will trade."
Bastille fell to her knees, and at first I thought she was weeping. Then I could see that she was simply shaking, white-faced. I didn't know it at the time, but pulling the flesh stone from the body of a Kristen is an unspeakably vulgar and gruesome act. To Bastille, it was like Kiliman had shown her Drowlin's heart, still beating in his hand. You think I'd bargain with you? I asked.
Yes,
Kilimon said simply. He didn't have the flair of evil that Blackburn had shown. No flaunted arrogance, no sharp clothing, or laughing voice. Yet the quiet danger this creature expressed was somehow even more haunting. I shivered.
Careful, Al,
Kaz said quietly.
Those creatures are dangerous. Very dangerous.
Kilimon smiled, then dropped the sword and flipped a hand forward. I cried out as I saw a lens in his hand. It flashed, shooting out a beam of frosty light. Bastille came up, her dagger held claw-like in her hand. She took the beam straight on the crystalline blade, then stumbled backward. She held it, but just barely. I growled, throwing off the translator's lenses and pulling out my Windstormer's lenses. He wanted to fight?
Well, I'd show him.
I snapped the lenses on, then focused on the Scrivener's bone, sending forth a wave of powerful wind. My ears popped, and Kaz cried out from the sudden increase in pressure. The blast of wind hit Kilimon, throwing him backward, spraying bits of metal from his body. Kilimon growled, and his Frostbringer's lens turned off. To my side, Bastille fell to her knees again. I could see that her hand looked blue and was crusted with ice. Her little dagger's blade was cracked in several places. Like the Kristen swords, it could deflect oculatory powers, but it obviously wasn't meant to handle much punishment. Kilimon righted himself, and I could see the bits of metal that had fallen off of him spring up little spider-like legs. The nuts, screws, and gears scuttled across the floor, climbing up his body and rejoining with the entire pulsing, undulating heap of metal scraps. He met my eyes and growled, bringing up his other hand. I focused again, blasting him with another wave of wind, but the creature stayed on his feet. Suddenly, I felt myself being pulled forward. His other hand held the lens that Bastille had called a Voidstormer's lens, the one that sucked in air. The lens was pulling me toward the bars, even though I was pushing Kilimon away with my own lenses. I slipped on the ground, stumbling, growing panicked. Suddenly, hands grabbed me from behind, steadying me.
"What did I tell you, kid?" Kaz called over the sound of the wind. "That thing is part alivened. You can't kill him with regular means. And those are blood-forged lenses he's using. They'll be more powerful than yours."
He was right. Even with Kaz holding on to me, I could feel myself being pulled toward Kilimon. I turned my Windstormer's lenses away from him, then focused them on the wall, pushing myself back. Kilimon turned his lens off. I was shaken by the force of the wind blowing from my face. I stumbled, knocking Kaz over, and I nearly lost my footing as I turned my lenses off. In that moment, Kilimon focused his lens directly at the pair of translator's lenses in my other hand. Apparently, the Voidstormer's lens, just like my Windstormer's lenses, could focus on a single object. The translator's lenses were pried free from my fingers and sucked across the room. I yelled, shocked, but Bastille snatched the lenses from the air as they passed her. She stood up, dagger in one hand, lenses in the other. I stepped up beside her, readying my Windstormer's lenses, trying not to look at the frosty wounds on Bastille's hand. Kilimon stood up, but did not raise his lenses.
"I still hold the knight," he whispered, picking up the fallen Kristen sword. "She will die, for you don't know where to find her. Only I can replace her fleshstone."
The room fell silent. Suddenly, Kilimon's face began to disintegrate. The tiny bits of metal all springing legs and crawling down his body, half of his head, then his shoulder, and finally one arm all transformed to tiny metal spiders which crawled across the bars separating us, swarming like bees in a hive.
"She will die,"
the Scrivener's bone said, somehow speaking despite the fact that half of his face was now missing.
"I do not lie, Smedri. You know I do not lie."
I stared him down, but felt an increasing sense of dread.
"Do you remember what I said about choices? It seems to me that no matter what you choose, you end up losing something. In this case, it was either the lenses or Drowlin's life."
"I will trade her to you for the lenses," Kilimon said. I was sent to hunt those, not you. Once I have them, I will leave.
The metal spiders were crawling into the room, crossing the floor, but they stayed away from Bastille and me. Kaz groaned, finally getting to his feet from where I'd inadvertently pushed him. I closed my eyes.
Bastille's mother, or the lenses.
I wished that I could do something to fight. But the Windstormer's lenses couldn't hurt this thing. Even if they blew him back, he could simply flee and wait for Drowlin to die. Australia was still lost somewhere in the library.
Would she be next?
I will trade, I said quietly. Killaman smiled, or, at least, the remaining half of his face smiled. Then, to the side, I saw several of his spiders climb up on something. A tripwire in the room where I was standing. The floor fell away beneath Bastille and me as the spiders tripped the wire. Bastille cried out, reaching for the edge of the floor, but she just barely missed grabbing it.
Rocky Mountain oysters!
Kaz swore in shock, though the pit opened a few feet away from him. I caught one last glimpse of his panicked face as I tumbled into the hole. We plummeted some 30 feet and landed with a thud on a patch of too soft ground. I hit on my stomach, but Bastille, who twisted herself to protect the translator's lenses she still clutched, scraped against the wall, then hit the ground in a much more awkward position. She grunted in pain. I shook my head, trying to clear it. Then, I crawled over to Bastille. She groaned, looking even more dazed than I felt. But she seemed all right. Finally, I glanced up the dark shaft toward the light above. A concerned Kaz stuck his head out over the opening.
Alcatraz! He yelled. You two all right?
Yeah, I called up. I think we are. I poked at the ground, trying to decide why it had broken our fall. It appeared to be made of some kind of cushioned cloth. The ground is padded, I called up to Kaz. Probably to keep us from breaking our necks. It was another curator trap, meant to frustrate us, but not kill us.
What was the point of that? I heard Kaz bellow at Killaman. They just agreed to trade with you.
Yes, he did.
I could faintly hear Killaman's voice.
But the librarians of my order have a saying. Never trust a Smedri.
Well, he's not going to be able to trade with you while he's trapped in a pit, Kaz yelled.
True, Killaman said. But you can trade. Have him pass you the translator's lenses, then meet me at the center of the library. You are the one who has the power to travel places, are you not?
Kaz fell silent.
This creature knows a lot about us, I thought with frustration. You are a Smedri, Killaman said to Kaz, but not an oculator. I will deal with you instead of the boy. Bring me the lenses, and I will return the woman, with her flesh stone, to you. Be quick. She will die within the hour.
There was silence, broken only by Bastille's groan as she sat up. She still had the translator's lenses in her hand. Eventually, Kaz's head popped out above the pit.
Alcatraz, he called. You there?
Yeah, I said.
Where else would we be?
Bastille grumbled.
It's too dark to see you, Kaz said. Anyway, the Scrivener's bone has left, and I can't get through the bars to follow him. What should we do? Do you want me to try to find some rope?
I sat, trying, with all of my capacity, to think of a way out of the predicament. Bastille's mother was dying because a piece of crystal had been ripped from her body. Killaman had her, and would trade her only for the translator's lenses. I was trapped in a pit with Bastille, who had taken a much harder hit falling than I had, and we had no rope. I was stuck, looking for a solution where there wasn't one. Sometimes, there just isn't a way out. And thinking won't help, no matter how clever you are.
In a way, that's kind of like what I wrote at the beginning of this chapter. You remember the secret thing I claim to have done in this book? The shameful, clever trick? Did you go looking for it? Well, whatever you found, that wasn't what I was intending. Because there is no trick. No hidden message. No clever twist I put into the first 14 chapters. I don't know how hard you searched, but it couldn't have been harder than I searched for a way to both save Drowlin and keep my lenses. I was quickly running out of time, and I knew it. I had to make a decision. Right then, right there. I chose to take the lenses from Bastille and throw them up to Kaz. He caught them, just barely. "Can your talent take you to the center of the library?" I asked. He nodded. "I think so, now that I have a location to search for." "Go," I said. "Trade the lenses for Drowlin's life. We'll worry about getting them back later." Kaz nodded. "All right. You wait here. I'll find a rope or something and come back for you once Bastille's mother is safe." He disappeared for a moment, then returned, head sticking back out over the opening. "Before I go, do you want this?" He held out Bastille's pack. The grappler's glass boots were inside. I felt a stab of hope, but quickly dismissed it. The sides of the shaft were stone. Besides, even if I did get free, I'd still have to trade the lenses for Drowlin. I'd just have to do it in person. Still, there was food in the pack. No telling how long we'd be in the pit. "Sure," I called up to him. "Drop it." He did so, and I stepped to the side, letting it hit the soft ground. By now, Bastille was on her feet, though she leaned woozily against the side of the pit. This was why I shouldn't ever have been made a leader. This is why nobody should ever look to me. Even then, I made the wrong decisions. A leader has to be hard, capable of making the right choice. "You think I did make the right one? Well then, you'd be as poor a leader as I was. You see, saving Drowlin was the wrong choice. By trading the translator's lenses, I may have saved one life, but at a terrible cost. The librarians would gain access to the knowledge of the Incarna people. Sure, Drowlin would live, but how many would die as the war turned against the Free Kingdoms? With ancient technology at their disposal, the librarians would become a force that could no longer be held back. I'd saved one life, but doomed so many more. That's not the sort of weakness a leader can afford. I suspect that Kaz knew the truth of that. He hesitated, then asked, "You sure you want to do this, kid?" "Yes," I said. At the time, I didn't think about things like protecting the future of the Free Kingdoms or the like. I just knew one thing. I couldn't be the one responsible for Drowlin's death. "All right," Kaz said. "I'll be back for you. Don't worry." "Good luck, Kaz." And he was gone.